Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
Since 1889, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump reviving and expanding a policy from his first administration targeting a dozen countries with a full travel ban. It means no visitors from those countries, no temporary trips, no permanent moves. The president also placing partial travel restrictions on another seven countries.
People from Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela will now be unable to come to the U.S. permanently or get student or tourist visas. The White House says they're targeting countries that lack proper vetting, fail to share identity and threat information, or exhibit high visa overstay rates.
ABC's Mary Bruce. Russian airstrikes have killed five more people, including, Ukraine says, a one-year-old boy, his mother and his grandmother, part of a drone attack in a northern city. Israel has recovered the bodies of two Israeli-American hostages taken in Hamas's October 7th attacks. Also, those U.S.-Israeli-run centers in Gaza shut down for a second day. This is ABC News. 80-year-old bombs, enough to send thousands of people in Germany scrambling.
More than 20,000 people had to be evacuated in Cologne, Germany, after several bombs from World War II were found. They were uncovered during construction work. A hospital and dozens of hotels had to be evacuated so the bombs could be defused.
That's ABC's Rhiannon Alley. A new court filing in one of the most watched murder cases in the country.
New York prosecutors now say they have unambiguous evidence against accused CEO killer Luigi Mangione. In a new filing, prosecutors cited writings attributed to Mangione, saying he surveilled United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson before gunning him down on the sidewalk. One entry saying Thompson, quote, had it coming. Another one, months before the shooting, reads, I don't feel any doubt about whether it's justified, writing, the target is insurance. It checks every box.
ABC's Andrew Dimbert, the FBI, says the writings in Mangione's diary amount to a confession in the killing. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
They say the more things change, the more they stay the same, and that's certainly true at the Phoenix Center, a longtime favorite in Richland County. It remains the go-to destination for bowling, great food, and lasting memories. It's where friends gather, laughs are shared, and good times roll, literally. Open Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and closed on Sundays. The Phoenix Center continues to serve up favorites like their legendary pizza and friendly atmosphere. Call 649-7469 for more information or carry out at the Phoenix Center.
WRCO Hometown Weather Watch, sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765. You don't need 20% down to make your homeownership dream come true.
Lots of sunshine and balmy conditions, a high near 80 today with light northeasterly winds. Some clouds tonight, a low of 54. Friday, partly sunny and continued mild, a high of 77. A few clouds Friday night and 54. Saturday, partly sunny and comfortable, isolated showers possible, and a high of 75.
Hi, this is Daniel Miller, Old Cooch Books and Libation, downtown Richland Center. Got a lot of new books for you, and replenishing from Christmas, and the kids' books especially. Old Cooch Books and Libation, a full-service bookstore. Order for you anytime. Old Cooch Books and Libation. Don't forget, we wrap presents for free.
If you're looking for the perfect flooring for your next project, whether it's carpet, tile, wood, or laminate, Badger Land Flooring has you covered. Not sure what suits your space? Visit Jamie, Amy, and the team at their showroom at 1475 Highway 14 East Richland Center. With over 40 years of installation experience, they will guide you to the best flooring solution and ensure it's done right. Stop by Badger Land Flooring and let their expertise bring your flooring vision to life.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. We've heard this for decades now, but what does that really mean? It's much more than a tagline or a catchy jingle. It's the very fiber of our existence. Being like a good neighbor is not about competing with the other guys. It's about being different. Distancing ourselves from the constant categories of cheap and quick, because what we do deserves more. Who we serve deserves more. At Julie Karen State Farm, we serve our customers and community with pride and privilege. For that, we are forever grateful. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust.
WRCO Studios, proudly sponsored by the Richland Family Restaurant. Fill up with something delicious.
On our morning show get-together today, we have Wisconsin State Senator Sarah Kievsky representing the 14th District. She's back in the studio to join us, making the commitment to drive over here to Richland Center to see us. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, you're welcome. Hello, hello, everybody.
Great to have you in here today. What a beautiful day.
Oh, my gosh. Gorgeous. Yes. Beautiful drive.
And in our community, we're really excited right now. We have two softball teams playing in the sectional final
tonight. Oh my gosh, really?
So yeah, Ithaca and Richland Center both, and you know what a positive thing those can be for communities, don't you?
Oh my gosh, small town communities and rallying around your athletic teams or your drama clubs, you know, and going to all the things that make their experiences in school so beneficial and bring the community together. I think it's so lovely. So bravo to them. I hope good things for them.
Were you in sports, involved in sports at Cashton when you went to school?
I laugh because I wasn't necessarily the best, but yes, I was a pretty good volleyball player. And actually, I have a really funny story about that. And I was a decent basketball player. The volleyball player, I keep on telling my girls, you know, I wasn't that great because I like boost them up. They play volleyball now. And I'm like, oh, you know, I wasn't that great, but you guys are so great and so good. And the other day, I gave one of them some feedback and they said, Mom, no offense, but you know, you weren't very good during high school. So, and I said, oh, I think I downplayed. I actually wasn't that bad, but I was just trying to make them feel good. So anyway, it was just pretty funny.
Sure. I think there are more opportunities to get more skills now, though. There
oh my goodness
clubs
gracious.
And camps and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I didn't start volleyball until high school, essentially. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they've been playing now for years. And so needless to say, they are better than me at this age. But that does not necessarily mean I was, you know, a total schlep.
Well, you were in our community recently. I know you and Senator Paff were here, and you had a round table with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. How did that go here in Richland Center?
Oh, it was really great, actually. I mean, so many dedicated community members came to talk about their concerns, mostly about what's happening at the federal level and how those things will impact small businesses, the hospitals, our schools, families in general. And so it was wonderful to gather, but honestly a bit heartbreaking to hear the angst behind everyone's words that were there, including, again, farmers, families, small business owners.
Mm-hmm. Was there a common question? Anything that was brought up that you can think of?
I think the biggest thing was, do you know what's going to happen, and do you know how you can protect us? Uh-huh. And unfortunately, the reality is no, we don't necessarily know. We know what you know, pretty much, when you see it tweeted or, you know, declared. Then we also know that this tariff might have changed last night, or this border has just closed to these international people. You know, you would think that somebody in state politics would know more quicker, but the reality is that's not how this administration works. So we don't know in advance. And there was a lot of questions about, well, what can you do to help protect Wisconsinites from what's happening at the national level. And it's difficult because one of the ways that we can try to do things, again, this isn't really the legislature of the state, but is our attorney general is involved in a lot of lawsuits to try to protect our state from having some of these consequences, like the impacts on our educational system or the impacts from NIH or, you know, pulling out funding for research. So there, Josh Call is really involved in that with other attorney generals of other states, and they're kind of going together and trying to do some of that. But while we're looking at congressional things, so what we talk about, I'll go back a second. What we talk about in a lot of these town halls is that there's three ways really to respond and to protect us as individuals and constituents, what's happening in our country. One is the courts. And so, again, I was talking about Josh Call as the Attorney General working on our behalf as Wisconsinites. The other one is Congress. And so the Congress, so we're, you know, making sure that our senators and U.S. representatives know what we believe in, what we support, and getting our voices heard there is really important because they are the ones that have the votes for, like right now, this budget bill that's coming out. And then the third one is constituents. And so it's really making sure that our voices are heard, making sure that we are supporting legislation that we believe in, going to voice our concerns. Maybe it's at a committee meeting, maybe it's through an email, and making sure that we're doing those things, or not spending your money where you don't feel like that organization is representing your values. Making sure that you, let's say, let your voice be known if you're going to hold a sign up on the corner of your local street to say, hey, I'm not supporting this. I don't believe ICE should take out our, you know, undocumented workers from farms right now. So, you know, trying to like get our voices heard because people do still have power and we need to make sure that we use it. So those are the three main ways, and we talk about that a lot.
Reach out to your representatives. That's probably the place to start, right?
Yeah, it's a really important one. They are keeping track, right? They keep track of who calls, what emails they receive. And what we see is this pushback is having an impact. Right now, at the federal level, we're hearing some Republicans that recently voted in Congress for this bill recently, this mega bill, they're now hearing from constituents, wait a minute, did you realize that this was in the bill? And they're like, oh, because it was so massive that there were things that were stuck in there. And now even some Republicans are saying, oh, I didn't know that, and I don't support that. And so making sure that our voices are heard and making sure people know what we believe in, what we stand for, and what we're concerned about, so that they will hopefully vote against things that are not in our best interest.
On the state level, Sarah, certainly that's been the talk. Of course, the governor's proposed budget, and lots of things were kind of gleaned from that. And maybe you could talk about that a little bit from your standpoint.
Well, as we know, the budget process, as I'm learning, right? I'm 5 months into my new role. As I'm learning, the budget comes forward from the governor, and then it goes to a committee called the Joint Finance Committee. And what they do as a group of 16 legislators, 8 of them are from the Assembly, 8 of them are from the Senate. It turns out the breakout of those is 12 Republicans total and 4 Democrats total. So this committee then takes that budget that the governor presented them with and decides kind of what stays in, what comes out. And they took out every budget piece out of it and have started from scratch. And there are, I believe, over 600 pieces of it that they have taken out that basically cannot be reconsidered into this budget. A few of those are really critical. One of them that I'm really just heartbroken that they took out is the child care counts provision. And that has been something that was started during the pandemic with federal funding and help so that we can help support our child care providers to keep their doors open, because unfortunately we are having a huge dilemma with child care availability in our state. We have what are called child care deserts in many places in our state. Richland Center would be one of those areas. Richland County, Sauk County. And so what a desert means is there are at least three kids needing a spot for every one spot that is available in the in a child care availability. And so that desert is causing so many people either to have to leave the workplace or financial strain. So this child care counts is giving money to these child care centers so that they can keep their doors open. They can make sure that their rates aren't driven up so much that people can't afford it. And they're able to pay their workers a sustainable wage so that those people are not leaving the industry, because that's also what's been happening. They're being paid very minimally, oftentimes something like $11 an hour, $13 an hour. It's just not sustainable. So this child care counts has been really important. It was ripped out of the budget. It was then put in this position where it can't be reconsidered by the Joint Finance Committee. So I helped propose legislation to bring it back and just a separate bill to say, hey, we must do this. This is $240 million in over each year of the next 2 years, the biennium. And it's critical. If we don't do this, it will have dire consequences on our economic viability as a state. And we must consider not just what we're spending, but seeing where the spending is actually investment. And this investment helps us grow our economy, stabilize our economy, and make sure that we're making good investments rather than just seeing everything as a cost that is undesirable, because I think it's short-sighted.
Really, it again, that's another thing that has a domino effect, you know, with, you know, the high rates that you pay and things like that. But it takes people out of the workforce. If they don't have anybody to watch their kid, they have to stay home and can't take a job that they want and things like that.
Right. And what we have is workforce shortage, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we're having a workforce shortage and we're creating a situation where we're going to have more of that, that's a dilemma for our economy. If we have fewer people working or making money, right, then they also have less money to spend mm-hmm. at our local convenience stores, at our local businesses, at our local, you know, for our school projects, right? So we have to recognize that that has a cascading impact that affects everyone, especially in our rural communities.
So you mentioned that you're trying to develop another bill. How does that work then? When would that be viable, or when would that be looked at and voted on?
So it's already been presented. We had a press conference about it about 2 weeks ago, perhaps. And so we're looking for co-sponsorship. Basically, all of my Democratic colleagues are signed on, recognizing the importance of this. Unfortunately, the way it works, again, I'm learning, right? The way it works is that a bill can have tremendous support. But the person, and then each bill goes to a committee. So that one would probably, well, I guess I'm not sure which committee. It gets assigned to a committee. And these committees are, you have committees on the Senate side and you have committees on the Assembly side. So this bill would be sent to whatever committee it aligns with, hopefully, on the Senate side and the Assembly side. Then in that committee, the chair of the committee gets to decide whether or not there will be a hearing on that bill. Right now, the chairs of all committees are Republicans. And right now, no chair has allowed it to be heard. So it might stay flat and unheard and unmovable because they're unwilling to have it even get a hearing to make sure that we are very well informed as a body of whether or not this is an important piece of legislation or not. And so it's tragic.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe that it's not easy to see that this is something that is needed. You know,
I think it is easy to see for people that are willing to recognize. I mean, if you talk to any young family that has children, what they're recognizing is that the cost of childcare right now is untenable. It's getting close to what it costs to send children or to send into students to college. It's getting that expensive. And so many people are saying, well, how is it so expensive now? It wasn't that expensive in my day, right? And so they must be just trying to make tons of profit. These childcare centers or these childcare workers must just be like, wanting to make an exorbitant salary. The reality is none of that's true. What's happened really is that when I had children, so I have a blended family of six kids that all have been in childcare at different times, in different looks. And what we're recognizing is, so this was what, I guess 15 years ago when I was really having childcare, 15, 20 years ago, what was more likely is people were willing, women in particular, willing to take a very limited salary and work in this field because oftentimes their partners had a salary that could then sustain them as a family. Our economic reality right now is it doesn't work anymore. Women need to make, and again, I'm parsing out with women because most childcare providers are women. They can't stay in the field, even if they would love to, because they're making $11, $13 an hour. And you can make more at Quick Trip. You can make more, doing something else. Maybe that isn't your passion, but when you have bills to pay, you can't just take a job that is your passion. You need to go where the money is. That's just the reality. And so that's why so many people are leaving the workforce in these childcare roles. And so when we're saying it's because, they're being greedy, it's not greed, it's trying to keep up with inflation, and families simply can't manage having a one person stay in that field and make so minimal and still maintain their family finances.
Another thing that we've talked about a lot in this program, school budgets, and of course, it's a domino effect. If there's a delay in the passing of the current budget from the governor, school districts are trying to make financial plans for the coming school years, and that kind of gets put on the back burner too as well. So kind of makes it tough for area schools to kind of know where their finances are and what's going to be for the next years, right?
I think it's tough is like mild, right? I mean, anxiety provoking, desperately stressful, right? Because administrators need to know what their budget is going to be. And right now, what we heard yesterday is that budget talks between the governor and the Republicans have fallen apart and the Republicans have stepped away. There isn't agreement. Right now, they're wanting tax cuts. And it sounds like what I understand is the governor is saying, I'm open to considering those as long as we do better funding of our schools and making sure that we have healthcare, because those are the things that every single town hall that has been had, those are the issues that people are bringing to the forefront. And he's trying to listen to the people in his state and what they want. And so those budget negotiations fell apart last night. And we have until June 30th. Generally, the budget needs to be done by July 1st. And then whatever provisions are available, then that is how, schools then make their decisions about what they're going to be able to do, what they can't do. The fact that this happened is dire. And so it's going to have a real negative impact. My hope is eternally hopeful, right, that they'll get right back into conversation and still be able to make this work. But if not, we are, you know, we're facing a reckoning that is not going to be pretty.
Well, you've been at it a few months now,
yes.
and you've admitted it's a learning process.
Oh, my, yes.
And things like that. So do you still remain hopeful and, you know, that you can kind of get your goals accomplished that you set out to get?
I think I will always be hopeful because I think good policy is just good policy. You know, I mean, the facts bear things out. Numbers show the truth, right? And so I'm eternally hopeful that eventually part of it will be, I believe now my role in some ways is education and activation. education, making sure people understand what's happening. Because without an understanding of what's happening, people don't know enough about why things are going on the way they're going on. I didn't know. I didn't understand some of the things I now understand. And I think it's really important to do my due diligence of educating people about what's happening. And that could be even about both parties, right? Where I see there might be stuck places for both parties. Right now, I feel like it's really important to talk about the budget process, to talk about this committees and how things get stuck and why when people are saying, oh, I want you guys to work together, I'd be like, we're trying, right? But there are blockades here that are entrenched and really dysfunctional in a way that is shocking once you find out. So education is a big part of it. And then activation, telling people about their voice and how important it is and what they can do. Because I am only a voice for them. They need to tell me, right? My constituents need to tell me what they want. And then I plug forward and do that hard work. Not just me, but telling their other elected leaders what is important. Not just saying, oh, you know what, my voice doesn't really matter. Those politicians, they don't listen anyway. Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. If we care about doing our job well, yes, we do. If we care about keeping our job and making PACs happy, then I guess you're right. That's not my goal. I don't, PACs are not my constituents. People are. And so I want to know what you want, and I want to do my due diligence to make sure that that is done. But I need you to be activated enough to let me know what you need, what you want, and to make sure that your voices are heard.
One of the things you said in your very first visit after being elected was the fact that you don't care whether you're elected again. You're out to do a job, and you may have to ruffle some feathers, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that sounds really kind of crass, but the reality is that when I was asked to run for this office, I did it as a public service. If I have the capacity and the skills needed to maybe help people be heard, to pass legislation because I have capacity to craft things, understand things, mobilize around things, then I'm going to use those skills for the betterment of Wisconsinites. I have never been somebody that has wanted power for power's sake. I don't even understand it, to be honest. I would want power. One of the things I remember Governor Walz, I believe, said was, I don't get political capital not to spend it, right? And so that's how I see my job. Like, if I have any political capital, if people believe in me and I have their support, then I'm going to spend it on the things that are important. And to me, importance is not keeping a job. Importance is doing a job. And so if I'm doing a job, I will get reelected if I'm doing a good job. If I'm not doing a good job, I won't get reelected. And I shouldn't. I mean, that's just how it should be. And so I'm not oriented to, like, whether or not in 4 years I get reelected. I'm oriented in doing the right thing that I believe, based on what I hear from constituents and what my values orient me to. I believe in that. And I just fundamentally believe it'll work itself out. And again, if I'm the wrong person, then get the right person in. But I'm going to try my darndest to be the right person based on what my constituents want. And if it doesn't work out, you know what? I have 6 great children to spend more time with, and I have a lovely career as a mental health provider that I just love and still do part-time. And so I will be just fine.
Yeah. That's well said. Sarah Kiesky, our guest here on WRCO's Morning Show. We'll be back with more in a moment as we talk a little bit of state politics. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about May was Mental Health Month, Awareness Month. We'll talk about some of the concerns related to that as well statewide here on the Morning Show.
It's been said, a goal without a plan is just a wish. This is Nick Hodge at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet. It's our goal to provide your family the very best service possible. That goal is the easiest to achieve with planning. Our plan is helping you pre-plan your arrangement. Plans can be as simple or as detailed as you desire. We'll help you create the service you desire and make sure your plan addresses all your concerns at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Progressive knows there are some surprisingly expensive things in life, like fences. A house with a big yard and a white picket fence was always the dream. But then you saw the price to install a fence and you're wondering if the color is driving the price up. Nobody ever dreams of a beige or a gray picket fence, right? So maybe those fences are cheaper. But no, they're not. Then you remember that switching your home and auto to Progressive could save you hundreds and make all your dreams of a fence come true. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers not available in all states.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Saxonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Join the legacy at Scott's Industries, a proud family-owned business for 75 years. They're expanding and looking for dedicated team members. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. No experience necessary. Just bring your enthusiasm. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscadet. Or give them a call, 739-3171, to learn more. Scott's Industries, where opportunity meets tradition.
Now is the time to make sure your vehicle is tuned up for summer. Hi, this is Sean from Sean's Auto Repair and Performance. We'll check your coolant, do a radiator flush, or give you that tune-up you need. Or maybe it's a new set of tires or an alignment. We can do that too. Whether it's cars, trucks, or SUVs, you'll get courteous, quality, professional service for imports and domestics. Call us now at 608-649-AUTO. That's 649-2886. Sean's Auto Repair and Performance, 184 East Mill Street, downtown Richland Center. People who care about your car.
Many Americans have missed regular dental care in the past few years. It's important to see a dentist twice a year to identify any problems early. Taking care of your oral health helps overall health. Brushing at least twice a day with fluoride toothpaste and flossing daily can help prevent oral health problems. For more information, visit hrsa.gov/oral-health.
I'm Naheem Hines, proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom has muscular dystrophy, and the MDA helps her and kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. And MDA funds over 150 care centers for kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Learn more at MDA.org today.
We have Senator Sarah Kievsky in the studio with us today on WRC Radio for her semi-regular visit. Yeah. Glad to have you back in here with us today.
Thanks for the invitation.
Yes. So May was Mental Health Awareness Month. We did a couple of special programs here on that topic. That's certainly something that's near and dear to you, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So like I said before, I'm a mental health provider. I've done individual, family, and couples counseling for the last 26 years. And when I came aboard politics, I was a little unsure how I could blend my knowledge in the mental health field with my job as a legislator. And it has proven to be quite an interesting and important cross-section, because what I'm finding is there's a lot of conversation, rightfully so, about the need for more accessible and affordable treatment, and things like making sure that there's mental health access in schools, making sure that we have crisis stabilization centers, making sure that we have a suicide hotline, making sure that we're addressing right now farmers, right? There's the Angel Network that is really instrumental in making sure that we're addressing the needs of farmers that are maybe a little less likely to come to treatment in the traditional way, but instead kind of trying to go to them and assist them. All those things are really great, and they're treatment focused. But what I am convinced of is that my job as a legislator needs to be two-pronged. One is to help make sure that we have some of those resources now, because we have a growing epidemic of mental health issues. But it's even more important for me to help people understand that there are what are called social determinants of health, and making sure then that we don't just address the problem of mental health, but we talk about the causes of mental health and address those with important legislation. So what do I mean? What I mean is we need to recognize that the things that cause depression, anxiety, and all of this emotional destabilization oftentimes comes from financial instability, housing instability, food insecurity, lack of sense of safety in our environment, such as gun violence. And so we need to go to these precursors, if you will, to make sure that we're addressing the needs there so that we don't have the trickle-down effect into the mental health issues that we're continuing to see. And we instead go, as I describe it, we don't just pull people out of the river. We actually go upstream and start addressing why people are falling in and do important legislation to keep people on the side looking at the water, not falling into it.
So you're looking more at preventative then, in other words.
Exactly. But it's even, because in some ways preventative, people will think, well, then we need to learn how to do deep breathing and, learn how to manage conflict. Yes, that's preventative and that's wonderful. But we have to understand that our mind body is connected. And so when we are distressed, and one of the big contributors to distress is uncertainty. And so a destabilization of our well-being happens when we are unable or uncertain whether or not we'll be able to pay our bills. whether or not we'll be able to keep our home, whether or not we'll be able to get the treatment for a physical ailment that we have, whether or not we'll be safe in school or if we have to worry about gun violence, whether or not we'll be able to feed our children or have a meal for the day. All of that causes tremendous angst. And that angst is felt in the body. And that angst is what contributes to issues with mental health struggles. So the anxiety epidemic, the depression epidemic, self-harm, suicidality, all of that comes from a destabilization of our own well-being. And it's not as if it's outside of, it's not like it's outside that you kind of get, you know, and then you can take a pill for. It's something that is created within the context within which you live. And that's really important to understand. So if we have a healthier society, we have a healthier people. If we have an unhealthy society, wealth distribution that is this extreme right now, where there are fewer people in the middle class, more people that are going to the level of poverty, and more people that are getting extremely wealthy, that is problematic for a society. That's going to create more violence, because people that are dysregulated, what do? They also act out, right? So we're going to have more incarceration. You know what that's going to do? Then you're going to have to pay more in your taxes to house the incarcerated. Okay, that's not smart. That's not good investment of our money, right? And so really thinking about these issues related to housing security, food security, making sure that we don't have some of these issues. I think education is a big one. Decreasing the educational financing that we're doing, we are creating a populace that are less informed, less capable of managing higher level of jobs. If we have less higher level of jobs and less pay, then we have more poverty. If we have more poverty, then that trickles out again. And what we also know is any adult that is in emotional distress, if they are dysregulated, if they're not doing well, that is felt by children. And so we have then children that are struggling more in our schools, acting out more. Then we have teachers that are having more behavioral issues in the schools. So we have teachers then that are more dysregulated, right? Are leaving then the schools, right? So then we have more issues where we don't have the means of educating our children as well as we would like. So we create these bigger and bigger and bigger problems by not investing earlier in some of these intervention strategies that I think are so important.
Social media too. I mean, if people get really hung up and distressed and emotional. I don't care what side of the fence you're on, because if you're reading something, you can get pretty worked up.
Just
daily viewing, right?
Yeah. I think social media, that's a whole other kind of piece, but it does play in here. One of the things that we know is that people that have created social media have done it in a way that have intentionally worked to activate our happy chemicals, our dopamine. And so in some ways, it is a relief from real world, right, that people go into to feel a fix. And so it is a short-term strategy when you're stressed. The problem is that it becomes a negative, kind of like if you have a glass of wine to relax, it maybe isn't the worst thing in the world, but if you have five, if you're on social media for 5 hours versus those 5 minutes, right, it's going to have a negative impact overall, because you're going to have with algorithms, you're only going to be fed the information that is probably aligned with what you think. You're not going to have the critical thinking skills. You're going to be more activated because they want you to stay longer. So they're going to give you the stuff that really, you know, ramps you up. It's all about the emotion. And the reality is, as beings, we are emotional creatures with a brain. We are not thinking creatures with a few feelings. That's not how we work. And so we have to think about the emotionality of people and how it is being driven now to be kind of negatively impacting us and keeping us stuck versus helping us activate and become advanced.
Mm-hmm. Are there things in the budget to look at? Are there some bills that are coming up?
So, well, yes, there. When I remember, I talked about some provisions that were taken out of the budget, 600 and some were taken out. One was collaborative grants between police departments and mental health workers. It was ripped out and can't be brought back in. Problematic, right? Because what we know is that in situations of calls with the police, we need to make sure that we are not addressing them all with aggression. We need to make sure that we're addressing them with an awareness that sometimes we need to de-escalate. And that is important, and that's why we need to make sure that we have some mental health providers also and have that great collaboration so that we're using the right tool in the right situation, not the same tool for all situations. So that was taken out of the budget. There was another one with more money for mental health providers in schools. That was taken out of the budget. Again, that's a big deal because if we don't have children that are able to better regulate, right, to feel better, they're not going to attend school, they're going to be problematic in school, and that has ripple out effects, like I said, for the other kids, for teachers, for administration, for the community. So yes, there's things out there. Are they getting heard right now by my Republican colleagues? It seems not.
Constituents talk a lot about the budget surplus and point at that as well. Is it truly as big as it is, as large as it is, Sarah, or how do you look at it?
Oh, so again, this is one of those things that I am not going to pretend that I know well or deeply. What I understand is there's the number $4.2 billion in the surplus that is bandied about, which sounds fantastic. And I think it was, in some ways, it has been good that there has been fiscal responsibility to make sure that we have some money set aside for emergencies, right? But much of this money has been pre-allocated for important things and has been stopped from being spent by legislators because of their personal feelings about some of the legislation that was passed. That seems ill-informed to me. So there is a surplus, but some of it is already allocated. So it's not actually a full amount that could be spent. But there are billions that could be spent. And in my mind, one of the best investments we could make is in our schools. Because right now, most of us know, our schools, if they are not better funded. Now, remember, there was in 2009 a decoupling of per student reimbursement for schools and inflation. So it has kind of stabilized this per student amount to schools has kind of stayed relatively the same while inflation has gone up. So our schools can't afford just basic operational costs, not because they're not managing their money well, is because they haven't been able to get the money appropriate for inflation. So what has happened? They've had to go to referendum. Right? So if we don't spend our tax dollars, our surplus on education, what will happen is we will have more schools having to go to referendum. Do you know what that means? You will be asked to raise your taxes again. And so when they say, oh, we don't want to spend on schools, they're already getting too much money, but we want to get tax cuts. Those tax cuts are ultimately artificial because you will get taxed eventually in another way. Because this is unsustainable. We have to educate our kids. We must. Otherwise, we are going to have a state like some of the southern states that have education that is really low. We're going to have more poverty. We're going to have more crime. We're going to have more. I mean, all the things that happen when you don't have a well-educated workforce, they're going to leave our state. And so we have to see that as a priority in my mind. And the tax cuts, while I think maybe there's a place for them in some way, it is artificial to think that is going to be good and not recognize that that will have dire consequences just in a different way.
Such a critical time, though. You know, we have schools whose referendums did not pass recently, and, yeah. And where do they go from here?
You know?
I mean, something's got to give.
Right. So my district, District 14, touches 30 different school districts. Every single one of them has gone to referendum at least once in the last 10 years. And so what do they do? Well, what they're having to do now is look at laying off teachers, decreasing opportunities for our kids. So if we want well-rounded kids, right, do we want them only learning math and English? That's good. That's fundamental. But do we not want them to be able to participate in a school team? Do we not want them to be able to go to debate club? Do we not want them to be able to participate in music development? I mean, that's fundamental for growing good citizens too, right? And so if we're cutting those things, we're making higher number of class sizes, right? So more students to one teacher. I mean, these are fundamentally bad for kids. They just are. That's where we're headed. That's what's happening across the board. There are states that are now going to four-day school weeks, right? Because they can't afford to keep the doors open, to pay the teachers. That's where we're headed if we're not smarter about this. And that is going to have, again, I get it. Short term, it looks pretty to get a bit more money in your pocket. And I understand, I am a taxpayer. I would love more money in my pocket. I also am a realist. I'm also recognizing how there is a return on investment that is incredibly important if we spend our money and invest wisely. And I think that's the missing spot here for some of these tax cut discussions.
Circling back around, Sarah, too, the mental health discussion, there's more need for counselors in schools and more need for special education funding and things like that as well coming up.
Yeah, I, the reality is that kids have more needs today. They simply do. And that's a complicated picture. I've laid out some of the reasons for that, and economically, is a piece of that. But we need to make sure that our kids have their needs addressed. And when we are not reimbursing schools reasonably for what they are mandated to provide for children, they are mandated to provide. If they have a need that is diagnosed and affirmed, then they are mandated to provide the speech pathology, let's say. And when they're mandated to do that, and they only get about 30% of the reimbursement of those fees, the rest of it comes out of the general fund for the school. That impacts everybody. So our governor has asked that they are at least reimbursed for 60%. I am 100% behind that. We must. That is only fair. If we're asking them to do it, we must also give them the funds to be able to do it.
I know there was some talk, too, about maybe helping some of the local smaller police forces and things like that, trying to get maybe more of a workforce going in there, and maybe something's been proposed anyway. Have you heard any word on that about supporting?
Well, I mean, what we're trying to do is recognize where do we have needs. So that is, across the board, right? It can be police, it can be teachers, it can be nurses. And we're trying to help figure out how to build the workforce in those areas. And so there's lots of different creative ideas, and I can't speak to the police specifically. But what I'll say is we're talking about allowing those that are willing, let's say, to work in a rural clinic for a period of time to maybe have their school loans decreased, right, or paid for, if they're willing to do that. Or we're willing to pay them to be in an internship rather than an unpaid internship, paying them to so they can be in an internship. Because what we're recognizing also is that the cost of schooling is so high that when they come out, I know for me, it took me 20 years to pay back my master's degree. My master's degree took me 2 years to get. It took me 20 years to pay back. Why? Because I was in the social services field. Mm-hmm. I do not make a lot in the social services field, but that doesn't matter. A school is going to cost a lot, right? And so we're we're trying to make it also feasible for people to go into these fields that are really important and come out if there's huge debt to be able to assist them in some way. I had to work for years to get my... So you have to get 3,000 hours, for example, of supervised training to become licensed to be a therapist. Those supervised hours are generally free because no insurance will pay somebody that's not licensed. So it's a really kind of convoluted system, and it's really difficult. Then if you're basically having school loans to pay back, but you have to work for free to get the hours needed for licensure, I mean, needless to say, it's broken, right? And so those are the kinds of things that we're trying to address in different legislation to try to see where we can help people get into these fields that are so important while also recognizing the financial burden that they're carrying.
Sounds like it's going to be a kind of a busy month of June here for you and your colleagues, isn't it?
You think?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be drinking a little bit extra coffee and getting my brain all busy with all the things that I'm trying to know, because again, being an informed legislator is very important to me, very tricky because it's so nuanced, it's so complicated. There's so much to know, and I'm one person, so I'm doing my best.
What is the camaraderie like, though? Because we hear sometimes, you know, in the media that, you know, I think they like the story of, you know, there's all this fighting and, you know, feuding going on across the aisles. What have you found in the first 5 months that you've been on the job?
I have found that the Republicans that are my colleagues that are, and I mostly only have interactions with them in like committees and or on the floor when we're voting for something. I would say so far, they maybe don't recognize I'm there. If I try to make eye contact, many avert their eyes. If I say hi, it's rare I get a response. It's not welcoming yet, but hopefully they will grow to recognize, you know, who I am, what I'm about, maybe get any partisan ideas that might skew their view. Yesterday, one did talk to me and said thank you for the questions I had for a bill that he had up in our committee, and I thought that was really nice. So we had a little chat. So I'm hopeful again. It's not awful. It's just not friendly yet.
Okay. Well, you're making a name for yourself, though, right?
I don't know. I guess you would have to ask them. All I know that I'm doing is doing my best. And if that makes a name for myself, I guess that I would hope we all would.
Do you get to enjoy some dairy breakfast?
I have a couple this weekend that I'm going to. Yep, dairy month. That's one of my favorite things. I mean, A, I love breakfast. B, I love going to farms and seeing all that's new. There's so much innovation in farms, and it's just really so fascinating. It's so different than the farm I grew up in with. That'll be really fun. I have one in Sauk County this weekend. I think Richland County also. I'll be heading out to those.
Enjoy it. We'll see you there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. We'll have you back again later on this summer then.
You're so welcome. Thanks, right. Bill.
Sarah Kayoski joining us, Wisconsin State Senator representing the 14th District.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled. Customer satisfaction is a must, and Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
Your first choice for better health.
Suicide is preventable. Learn how to make a life-saving connection at Safe Talk, a free 4-hour training session on Wednesday, June 18th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Richland Hospital and Clinics. Lunch will be provided. Register online at richlandhospital.com. Space is limited, so sign up today.
Are you looking for a meaningful way to give back to your community? Passages is looking for compassionate, motivated volunteers to join our team. We provide men, women, and children survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault with free, confidential services regardless of age, sex, or gender identity. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, from yard cleanup, donation sorting and organizing, and fundraising support, to shelter advocacy and survivor support. There are also a couple of larger outdoor projects that would be great for teams. Do you want to share a skill? We're also launching new life skills programming and are seeking volunteers to lead classes such as yoga, sewing, crocheting, cooking, meditation, grounding exercises, and more. Whether you're interested in direct client support or behind-the-scenes help, there's a place for you at Passages. Did you know that every hour you volunteer helps Passages meet its grant match? Learn more by visiting our website at passagesrc.com and click on the I Want to Help tab. There you will find a list of opportunities and a volunteer application. Join us in making a difference, one life, one step at a time.
The newest evolution of Farmall elevates performance, comfort, and styling. To continue the legacy of this legendary tractor, the new Farmall Medium Utility C-Series features four models that combine power and technology for use on the farm and in the field. Field Ops connectivity enables geolocation and remote monitoring of machine functions, while a heavy-duty front axle, increased hydraulic flow, and more rear lift capacity provide the power to handle more work with ease. Case IH, built by farmers. Stop by Johnson Tractor in Richland Center today to find out more about the all-new Farmall C.
Working outdoors often results in a great feeling afterwards, the feeling of having achieved something. Whether it's tackling fallen limbs, cutting firewood, or clearing land, Steel has a chainsaw for your next project. Find your Steel at Hillsboro Equipment, like the reliable MS-271 Farm Boss, a high-performance, high-tech chainsaw that's built to work day in and day out. Enjoy the satisfaction of a job well done with a Steel chainsaw from Hillsboro Equipment, Boston Equipment, or Slama's Lawn and Sport, Reedsburg.
Enjoy working with a locally owned mom-and-pop business? If so, consider Meyer Oil and LP. We've been locally owned since 1956, providing propane, bulk lubes, and fuel. We have you covered. If you're considering a new fuel provider, please call Meyer Oil and LP at 608-524-3900.